I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all
Hariom, everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. I think we've got a really amazing show for you this evening. And we're going to be talking about monatomics, a subject that isn't talked about very much at all. I did see Jim Mars discussed it at some length on one of his YouTube presentations. But in my mind, it is clearly the most amazing discovery of the century. And I guess we're in a new century now, and it's still the most amazing discovery I've ever heard about. And before we get into that, I would just like to mention to all the listening audience out there that if you have questions about tonight's show that you'd like me to answer, or if you have suggestions for topics you'd like to hear on ET Yoga, you can always email me at paperfungo@yahoo.ca. That's paper as in paper, fungo, F-U-N-G-O, all one word, at yahoo.ca. And also I've had quite a few emails this week concerning our show last week on healing the known and the unknown, quite a popular topic apparently. And for those who didn't get that website last week, that's at maxwellgreensite.com. That's Maxwell as in Maxwell House Coffee, green as in the color, site.com. And the name of that site is Healing the Known and the Unknown. And in preparing for tonight's show, it was a blast because going over the story about the discovery of monatomics and some of the amazing applications of monatomics is it was just a thrill to do. And I might start off by saying that where did I hear about it first? Because I know that many people have just never heard about this. It's certainly not in mainstream channels as far as information. And I first heard about it, of course, through Bashar, and talking about greasing the wheels, as he puts it. And clearly monatomics, I think the primary purpose for them is to act as a trigger to activate the light body. And just as organic foods are the best fuel for the physical body, clearly monatomics are a fuel for the light body. And the big connection that I made at that time, because some people with some very strange diseases were contacting Bashar concerning the cure. And I think that, as you'll find out as the program goes on this evening, the primary purpose and use of monatomics is for spiritual growth and ascension. However, one of the byproducts certainly is curing disease. And I'll say right off the top of the show, so I don't forget to mention it later, that if you have some sort of really strange disease, in addition to the website Healing the Known and the Unknown, which the ebooks there will give you tons of information on how to deal with those types of situations, and especially cancer, I would highly recommend getting a personal interview with Bashar, and that can be done through the Bashar website at www.bashar.org, and through that site you can actually arrange a personal interview with Daryl Anka, who will channel Bashar, and those meetings do have to take place in person, and they're in Los Angeles. Now, as a backup plan to that, you can actually get information via telephone interview from April, who is also connected with Esasani Energy. So those are two good sources if you've got something that is really serious, because personally, I don't know anybody on the planet that knows how to recommend specific doses of different types of monoatomics for particular ailments that Bashar would know. And I've heard him prescribe different monoatomics for different people with different types of conditions. And so I wanted to mention that right off the top. Now, to this point, I have no practical experience with the synthetics or of ingesting the white powder gold, which we'll discuss more as we go along tonight. But also, before I forget, I would like to mention that there's lots of BS out there about white powder gold. And the interesting thing about it is it's until about late 1980s, there wasn't even scientific machinery or apparatus to even discover white powder gold. It is it was only discovered through some use with spectroscopic analysis, stuff they use in quantum physics, that was able to even discern this stuff, because it's invisible for practical purposes. And yet it does appear in many natural forms. And for those who are out there who are vegans or vegetarians, you can be happy to find out that a normal amount and quantity of monatomics is present in green vegetables. And we'll be talking about a number of other foods that contain monatomics as well. But I thought it was highly interesting to note that all the studies that have been done with vegan diets, vegetarian diets, amazing results concerning health and regenerating the human body. And certainly now that all makes sense when you consider that many of these fruits and vegetables do contain monatomic elements or high spin electrons, which go a long way towards making beneficial results in many, many areas. I'm going to begin the story tonight with Wikipedia definition of monatomics. ORMEs, O-R-M-E, ORMEs, an acronym for orbitally rearranged monatomic elements, are monatomic elements, also called ORMIS elements or M-state elements, are atoms which comprise a substance in which its atoms are not bound to each other, called a monatomic state. They constitute a newly discovered form or phase of matter, and it's referred to as exotic matter, with entirely different physical properties from normal elements. They are thought to produce incredible physical and mental health benefits when ingested, and are already on the consumer product market. Monatomic gold is believed to have been eaten by the ancient Egyptians and was depicted to be a food of the gods, which would assist the Egyptians in unlocking their innate mental and spiritual abilities. The discovery of monatomic elements has so far received little mainstream attention, but is expected to become an important subject in the future. Some have even said that this discovery may constitute the uncovering of the esoteric philosopher's stone, as spoken of in alchemy, or even the famous Holy Grail. Viewed spiritually, it is thought to bring enlightenment. And further, a definition of philosopher's stone, reputed to be hard as stone and malleable as wax, is a legendary alchemical tool, supposedly capable of turning base metals into gold. It was also sometimes believed to be an elixir of life, useful for rejuvenation and possibly for achieving immortality. Now, I think that the key points of those definitions are clearly that hasn't been getting any mainstream attention, but expected to become an important subject. Yeah, I think it might be an important subject. I mean, it really affects all areas of life. It affects longevity. It affects the whole concept of teleportation. It affects disease, being able to provide energy sources. And unbelievable. The potential applications of white powder include the promise of making homes and businesses energy self-sufficient. It can even power their motor vehicles without the use of fossil fuels. There is reason to believe that it can be effective in the treatment of both cancer and AIDS, and there are physiological reasons to believe these claims. And it has been observed that the ormes, they work to repair damaged DNA strands in the human body. And my understanding is that when the ormes comes into contact with diseased cells, it not only neutralizes them, they reprogram them. I mean, I think of ormes as high-spin electrons that affect whatever they come into contact with. And in Lawrence Gardner's YouTube video, it's about an hour and 20 minutes long. I highly suggest you check that out. That's Lawrence Gardner's take on monatomic elements. And clearly, he views this the same way I do, in that it's a trigger for unlocking the dormant parts of the brain. In fact, in he reports that in 2002 and 2003, 50 individuals aged 17 to 52 that were diagnosed with dyslexia and ADHD, I think they took certain combinations of monatomic gold over about a two-month period, and it tested highly effective, and the results were immediate and cumulative, and produced greater intelligence, and more significantly, a better balance between left and right brain. And I guess if you could think of it this way, if you could think of a graph where you're using a scale of 0 to 10 and you're using your right brain a scale of 7 and your left brain on a scale of 1, well, after 2 months of study, when they checked out these people, they'd be using left brain 7 and right brain 7. So, you know, this is an area to activate dormant parts of the brain and actually balance people out. And they highly, highly recommend it after the results of these tests, you know, to make this as a remedy for dyslexia and ADHD. They also noted that in their experiments that it affected longevity, awareness, creativity. These are the byproducts. And monatomics have been connected with the Greeks and the Golden Fleece. It's been connected with the Ark of the Covenant and the science of monatomics, or the science of alchemy and the Philosopher's Stone. And this evening I'm not going into all the details concerning how they change base metals to gold, but in essence, when you melt down gold, that's when you get white powder gold. And on the Lawrence Gardner Show, he has some archaeological finds where there have been some Egyptian chambers that have been found that contained like barrels of monatomic gold. And these were way away from the rest of the mainstream civilization. And it was clear that the pharaohs at the time were ingesting white powder gold. And I guess also the inner circle, of course, was also involved with the Egyptian healing rods, which also have, we've really promoted those on ET Yoga. And in addition, the white powder gold gives levitational properties to its host, not to mention that it's a superconductor, which means really that it operates in different dimensions. And this is proven by the fact that when it starts to resonate in another dimension, it loses 4/9 of its weight, including the pan that it sits in when it's being weighed. It levitates. phenomenal substance. It has links to the DNA because it re-coordinates the cellular structure and cleans the DNA. It actually makes everything more intelligent, including the cells, which is how it goes about reprogramming the cells in AIDS and cancer. It's also amazing connection with anti-aging, because it enhances the hormonal secretions in the glands and the pineal in particular. It has clearly a significant impact or possibilities in the area of space and time and space travel, because clearly the energy goes into different dimensions and is a superconductor. And so obviously can move from one dimension to another. It also is the key to distance and teleportation, because as a superconductor, there's no resistance. There's no wires involved that makes connections between point to point automatically and instantaneously. Interestingly enough, that in the future, I know when we run out of oil or fossil fuels, how do you make electricity if you don't have them? Well, monoatomics, again, can be the answer to that. The electronic arcing is also linked to the Ark of the Covenant. And clearly, this is where Stardust meets the Stargate. I mean, monoatomics are clearly... should be on the front page news of every newspaper in the world. It's called the greatest potential gift to man that it's ever been known. In fact, in many respects, it's not even a new discovery, because it was known as Shamana in Egypt, also known as Mufkets. It was known as Mufkets in Mesopotamia. It was known as Mana by the Hebrews. And it was called the Stone of Paradise in Alexandria. And so in essence, this isn't really a new discovery. It's sort of a rediscovery of what had been known in certain secret circles for a long time. And the story of David Hudson. David Hudson is the person who rediscovered this amazing... sequence of turning base metals to gold and then melting gold to get the monatomic elements. And if you want to know the whole story about how he found it, and I would suggest the Lawrence Gardner video, as well as on the website, there's David Hudson Lectures 1, 2, and 3, and they're all phenomenal reading. And some of it deals with his whole story from the beginning of where he took the substances that he found, actually, in a farm in Arizona, and the different places that they tried to test it, and the whole sequence of ending up with a Russian scientist and spectroscopic analysis and the whole nine yards. And a lot of the places that he's taken this material to, like General Electric. And, yeah, there's a lot of the Cancer Society, et cetera. Okay, lots of big-name people know about this stuff. But, you know, we're not seeing it on the market. And I'll leave that part up to your imagination. However, where I'm going to pick up the story is... when he sort of found out that what he's got is exotic matter and a superconductor, and I'm going to pick his story up in a direct quote from a transcript of David Hudson's Dallas lecture, and he says, "You'd think my life was complicated. Here I am, a dirt farmer, and I have to learn chemistry, I have to learn physics, I have to learn about superconductivity. And now my uncle comes up to me with a paper and says, 'Dave, read this book. I think you'll enjoy it.' And I looked at it, and it's called Secrets of the Alchemist. It's a Time Life series book. And I said, 'What are you talking about, Caleb? I don't need to read that. That's about alchemy. That's the occult.' And he says, 'No, Dave, you need to read this book. It talks about a white powder of gold.' So I started reading the book. The Philosopher's Stone was a white powder of gold. The Philosopher's Stone was said to be the container of the light of life. We took some calf brains and some pig brains, and we did a destruction of the organic material and metals analysis, and over 5% by dry matter weight of the calves' brains and the pigs' brains were rhodium and iridium in the high-spin state, and nobody in medical research knows that. I found in the literature, and I'll show you, that the U.S. Naval Research Facility has confirmed superconductivity is the communication vehicle between cells in our body, but they don't know where the superconductivity comes from. It's like it's a stealth atom that no one can figure out what it is. And it's there, but no one can read it, just like this stuff. And when you realize that the Philosopher's Stone is the white powder of gold, then, of course, I have to find out, does it work? Does it really have the properties they attribute to it, which they claim that not only will it cure every disease known to man, they claim it's capable of changing the nature of man, making him into a different person. And when he became interested in this alchemy, because the white powder of gold was the alchemical substance, he began to do all sorts of reading, and one of those things he says he came across was the Melchizedek priesthood and the white powder of gold associated with the Melchizedek priesthood. So David says, I went to Rabbi Plotkin at the Temple Beth Israel in Phoenix, and I asked the rabbi, who is one of the most knowledgeable rabbis in Arizona. And he said, Rabbi, have you ever heard of the white powder of gold? And he said, oh, yes, Mr. Hudson, but to our knowledge, no one's known how to make it since the destruction of the first temple. He said, the white powder of gold is the magic. It can be used for white magic or black magic. And when you finally find out what the white powder of gold is, you begin to really appreciate that statement. So anyway, as I began to research this further, I found out about the history of it. I found out that it had been associated with the ancient peoples over in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. It was knowledge that was given to them by the claimed gods. Oh, and by the way, in my opinion, yeah, if you've gone into the Zechariah Sitchin material and you've kind of know about Anunnaki and how they manipulated our genes and made this race of beings to mine their gold, I don't think that takes too much of a genius to figure out the connection between the Anunnaki gold and melting the gold down to white powder gold. And it's always been depicted in literature as a triangular-shaped stone, but it's about twice as tall as it is wide, kind of elongated pyramidal shape. I think Zechariah Sitchin refers to it as Athender Stone. Ah, but all of their sacred texts always began with it. Curious enough, in the ancient Egyptian text, it was also referred to as the What Is It? And if you read in the Papyrus of Ani that was found in the tomb of Pepe II in Old Kingdom of Egypt, it says, I am purified of all imperfections. What is it? I ascend like the golden hawk of Horus. What is it? I come by the immortals without dying. What is it? I come before my Father's throne. What is it? And it goes on and on, page after page, talking about all these attributes that you require as you ascend, but they always stop and ask the question, what is it? Well, this was written about 2800 or 2900 BC, and they're asking the question, what is it? Well, when I found the Hebrew dictionary, I found out that the Hebrew word for what is it is mana. Mana literally means the same thing. What is it? And when you understand that the Hebrew people were actually living in Egypt for generations, they were the artisans. They were the metallurgists. They were the craftsmen. And when they left out of Egypt, they took this knowledge with them. And we find in the literature that, and this is particularly in Velikovsky's writing, Ages and Chaos, that he says that when the Hebrew people left Egypt, that the Egyptians decided they wanted to go after them, and they find the writings in Egypt where the Pharaoh and his army drown in a whirlpool of water. Now, this is right at the end of the Old Kingdom of Egypt. And that's where the Ark of the Covenant went, to Egypt. When the Hebrews realized that the Ark of the Covenant had left, these men who took it were the ones who, by blood right, were the correct ones to care for it. They were the eldest sons of the Levites and the king. But because they were sent away, they took the Ark of the Covenant. And the Hebrew people haven't really wanted to talk about this that much because it really was their doings that they lost it. And so the Aaronic priesthood or the rabbinical priesthood does not want to talk about the high priesthood leaving Jerusalem, but it went to Egypt. And it was kept in Egypt out on the island of Elephantine, where they built an exact duplicate of the Temple of Solomon. And you'll read and find out about that if you read Graham Hancock's book, The Sign and the Seal. This is all in there, and it's absolutely correct. They have excavated. The excavators have found on the island of Elephantine the exact dimensions of the Temple of Solomon, where the foundation was and where the Ark of the Covenant was kept. In the Temple of Luxor, they recorded all of the loot and all of the plunder that was taken from the Temple of Solomon. And then returned when Thutmose became Pharaoh and looted the temple. But there's no Ark of the Covenant because they already had that. And in that plunder, they list all of the items that they got, and they're all identified as being golden, and then silver, and then copper. But under the golden items, under the shoe bread, there is this elongated pyramidal shape that is the bread of the presence of God. It's the very same symbol that I told you earlier that is always shown as depicted in the sacred ceremony with the king offering the bread, the white bread, to the symbol of the Ark of the Covenant with the black anubis sitting on top of it. Well, the anubis represented the digestive system, and here's the king offering it, and it says, Keeper of the Secret, but it's white powder of gold being offered to the digestive system, which is the transformational process you go through. Now, what does it do? Well, David Hudson says, I'm no doctor, so I can't practice medicine. Anything that is administered to someone for the purpose of curing a disease is medicine. So therefore, I can't tell you on tape what's been done with it, what the doctors who have been giving it have done with it, but I can tell you that 2 milligrams is totally has gotten rid of Kaposi sarcomas on AIDS patients at 2 milligrams per day. 2 milligrams per day. There's 32,000 milligrams in an ounce. 2 milligrams is nothing, and it gets rid of KS. I can tell you that people who have taken it at 2 milligram injections, within 2 hours, their white blood cell count goes from 2,500 to 6,500 white blood cells. I can tell you that stage 4 cancer patients have taken it orally and after 45 days have no cancer any place in the body. We're not going to go into more specifics than that. He says, I'm not a doctor. My purpose in this was not to cure diseases and illness, but I did want to know, does it work? It's been used on Lou Gehrig's disease. It's been used on MS. It's been used on MD. It's been used on arthritis. It's been used on what else? That's all that's coming to mind right now, and it just does some very remarkable things in the body. The most important thing that it does, and the real reason that it's here, is not as a medicine. The reason this material is here is to enlighten and raise the consciousness of mankind. Now, if people don't understand that, I apologize, but that's really its purpose. And what we have done is we have given it in a high amount to some people who have had nothing wrong with them medically. We didn't know what to expect. So the first man, he did a 42-day food fast, which is pretty severe food fast. He went for 9 days with only water. He had a high colonic, and on the 10th day we began to give him 500 milligrams a day of this material. Now this was not gold. This was rhodium and iridium. And the reason we chose rhodium and iridium is because it naturally was in his body. It's an aloe vera gel. It's in ace manan. It's in man ole. It's in carrot juice. It's in grape juice. It's in grape seed extract. It's in slippery elm bark. It's in sheep sorrel. It's in many, many materials. And so it's totally natural. It's not a compound. It's not a drug. It's an elemental material. It's like taking an iron pill, but these are the atoms that flow the light of life in your body. And according to the ancient Egyptians, they said you have a physical body you have to feed physical food to so it can grow and become all that it's meant to be. And if you don't feed your material body, you die or you're very stunted. You don't grow and develop. You also have a light body, they said, and you must feed it also so it can grow and become what it's meant to be. And we haven't been feeding our light body because we haven't known what to feed it with. 500 milligrams a day for 30 days was called the Egyptian rite of passage. And so we had to find out, what does this do? Well, after 5 or 6 days of taking this material, this fellow began to hear this very high-frequency sound. And every day the sound got louder and louder and louder and louder and louder and louder. And by the time he finished his fast, he said it's like loudspeakers in his brain, literally roaring the sound. It's the same sound that many of the meditators have heard that you're told to listen for when you meditate, to find this sound. And when you think about it, most people don't hear it anymore. Well, this sound is roaring in man's head. It's roaring day and night. It's roaring when he's talking on the phone. It's roaring when he's working. And I said, doesn't this disturb you? Isn't this an irritating sound? And he said, not at all. Just like nectar, because it doesn't come through the ears, he said. It's inside the brain. And he said, Dave, this sounds to originate, the sound seems to originate about 8 inches above my head. It comes down into my brain, and it's like a hat band around my head, and it just roars here in my head, and I can feel a vibration all through my body. And David was also handed a book called The Secrets of the Golden Flower by Richard Wilhelm with an introduction by Carl Jung. And Richard Wilhelm did the Eastern translations for Jung. The book was written in 1931, and it's been translated and been reproduced and published several times since then. I guess it's now in paperback because some people are getting paperback copies. Anyway, it's verbatim describes this sound, and it says in the book it seems to be all about this sound, the hue. Well, we are the hue man, the man who can hear the sound. This is about the hue sound, and that it says in there that you get this energy in your pelvis and that this can be developed where it literally will take your whole body up over your head and everything. And when it finally is at a state of perfection, that it will feel like there's a column of light coming right out the top of your head. And I think the word that most people use for this is the Kundalini energy. And according to the Secrets of the Flower, it takes about 10 lunar months, which happens to be the same as the Egyptian said, 9 solar months, same time frame. But at the end of this, at the 9th month, he literally becomes a light being. It's the breaking through of the cosmic egg, and he literally becomes a light being capable of levitating, capable of bilocating to literally disappear here and reappear someplace else. Now, this sounds pretty preposterous, except if he's a perfect superconductor, he can levitate, he can walk on water. Interestingly enough, Sakharov's theory about gravity, in which he says that gravity is not a gravitational field, that gravity is, in fact, the interaction of matter, the protons and the neutrons and the electrons with the zero-point or vacuum energy. And what we experience as gravity is, in fact, the interreaction of the matter with the zero-point energy, that there is no gravitational field per se. And in his calculations and in his mathematics, he calculates that when matter is resonance connected in two dimensions, it no longer interacts in three dimensions, but it's only interacting in two dimensions by what he calls the jitterbug motion, that it loses 4/9 of its gravitational weight, or it weighs 56%. Which, if you all recall, is exactly what our material weighed, so 56% or 5/9 of its true weight, which means that the material is a resonance-connected quantum oscillator resonating in two dimensions, which just happens to be the definition of a superconductor. And when David met Hal Puthoff, he said, Dave, you know what this means? It means when you can control space-time, if you control gravity and you control gravity, you are controlling space-time. And so literally what these atoms are doing is they are bending space-time to weigh 5/9. He says there are theories in the published journals, credible journals, about moving faster than the speed of light from one place to another, but to do it you must have what's called exotic matter, matter that has no gravitational attraction at all. Do you know that iridium at 70 degrees Fahrenheit has no gravitational attraction at all? And that 70 degrees Fahrenheit is the temperature of your body or above, or that your body's above that. And so literally, if our body becomes filled with the light, we literally eat this until our light body exceeds our physical body, then we supposedly become light beings. And our physical body no longer controls our light body. Our light body now controls our physical body. And anywhere we can think we would like to go, we can travel there, not only spiritually, but physically, and take the body with us. And right now we only use 8 to 10% of our brain. What's the other 90% for? Did we evolve a brain we didn't use? I don't think so. It's like at some ancient time we used that brain and we used that DNA and we were a different person. Well, that sure sounds awfully philosophical, doesn't it? At any rate, What it is all about is love, total oneness with everyone. It's perfect telepathy, perfect communication. It's total love and total oneness. When you understand that superconductors don't have to touch, okay, we're back to science again. In electricity, the wires have to touch before electricity can flow from one wire to another wire, but superconductors can sit at a distance, and as long as they are in resonant harmony and their Meissner fields touch, they are one, because they flow light between them. So they act as one superconductor. So when you are a perfect superconductor, and she is a perfect superconductor, you are one with her heart and her mind. You know all things about her. Perfect telepathy, and that is the judgment. That is the oneness. Now, what does it do in the body? It literally corrects the DNA by a process, the equivalent of a denaturing solution. The DNA relaxes and recombines corrected. So all diseases that originate with a problem with the DNA can be corrected. But your reason for taking it cannot be to correct a disease. Your reason for taking it has to be a philosophical reason. It has to be to enlighten and to raise the nature of mankind. In doing that, it happens to cure diseases. So be it. Interesting to note that David Hudson said he had found not found any toxicity even in mega levels. So if you have somebody who's really sick, that's probably their best chance of recovery is high amounts of rhodium. Escyac tea, sheep sorrel, and slippery elm bark are high in rhodium and iridium. And he gives a plug for a Vitali tea. It's particularly great for people who have mouth cancer, throat cancer, stomach cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, any cancer of the soft tissues. The one area it doesn't seem to work in cancer is the lymphatic system. Carrot juice has high amounts of rhodium only. Rhodium is the cancer cure. Products made by Emprise Corporation, Manaloy, and Ace Manon, DHEA, precursor called Emprise Plus, all contain rhodium and iridium. The product that is made by Carrington Laboratories is called Ace Manon, is actually cleared by the AMA and FDA for cancer treatment in animals. It has been cleared for cancer treatment in humans, however, it's not been cleared, obviously, for cancer treatment in humans. However, they are selling more of it than if all the animals in the U.S. had cancer. So what they know is that the AIDS community has found out about it and is taking the material. When it is injected into the bloodstream, which is the way it is administered, there are dramatic increases in white blood cells and T cells. After injecting Ace Manon, which is 90% rhodium, into the blood, for a month and a half, the thymus grows about 40%. The thymus is what produces the T cells. The thymus grows. And if you don't know this, from the age 12 on, most people's thymuses begin to shrink from age 12 on. They have evaluated AIDS patients who have died and done biopsies on them, and they find the thymus is usually shrunken. This does increase the size of the thymus dramatically, and it is the rhodium that does it. The iridium and the gold seem to speed up the metabolism of the body about 40%, and they seem to go into the bloodstream and not through the kidneys. It seems to be taken into the acupuncture system of the body, and it seems to be associated with the spinal cord and the thymus, which in fact is the consciousness and the metabolic rate of the body. Other products that you might be familiar with is the kabuchi, or the Chinese mushroom, that has rhodium and iridium. Another excellent product is the aloe vera plant, the cold extract aloe vera. Now, I want you to know there are cold extract aloe veras that are excellent. There is a product called R-Pur Aloe, made over in Colorado. This is an excellent product. I've actually gone to High Health and purchased cold extract aloe vera from High Health, and there is absolutely nothing in it. And so just because the label says that it's aloe vera gel doesn't mean it is a good product. Flaxseed oil has rhodium and iridium. Almond seeds also have it. Apricot seeds have it. Grape juice has it. As I recall, it's Welch's grape juice that has the highest concentrations of monatomics in it. And in his March-April 1996 newsletter, Hudson wrote, "Cancer cells were placed in culture dishes and raised to maturity. When monoatomic rhodium was dispersed in the deionized water and added to the cancer culture, they attracted to the cancer cells but did not affect the cells' activities." However, when the rhodium is reacted with diluted hydrochloric acid and then introduced as a chloride into the cancer cells, the activities of the cells reduced by 45 to 55%. This truly amazed the researchers. They had previously seen materials which would kill cancer cells, and they had seen other materials which had no adverse effect on the cancer, but they had never before seen a material that literally changes the nature of the cancer cells and made them normal. And I think this is so totally in line with Bashar's teachings that you don't go against negativity. You don't go to kill cancer cells. This is pro-life. You put your energy in a positive direction. And new to research, the National Institute of Health has performed cancer cell testing, and 6 kinds of tests were performed on leukemia with no direct interaction with rhodium. 9 types of non-small cell lung cancers were tested with direct retardation of only one type of cell by the rhodium. That was NCIH23. There were 7 varieties of colon cancer tested with no interaction with the rhodium. There were 6 varieties of CNS cancer with no direct interaction. There were 8 varieties of a certain urelianoma with one variety referred to, showing a dramatic reduction of growth in the presence of rhodium. There were 6 varieties of ovarian cancer, 6 varieties of renal cancer, 2 varieties of prostate cancer, 8 varieties of breast cancer, none of which showed any direct interaction with the rhodium. And there was MD-MID test performed on Delta and also on the range, showing dramatic reduction in cancer activity. It's interesting to note that researchers reported beneficial results when a mixture of M-rhodium, 70%, M-iridium, 15%, and monatomic gold, 15%, is taken as treatment for the following diseases: AIDS, Alzheimer's disease, bipolar disorder, in cancer, lymphatic cancer, breast cancer, bone cancer, leukemia, brain tumors, prostate cancer, lung cancer, ovarian cancer, thyroid cancer, and uterine cancer, diabetes, heart disease, hepatitis C, kidney problems, liver disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, lupus, muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis. And by the way, Bashar, when asked the question, we wouldn't get longevity in other monatomic substances? Well, Bashar says, overall, there will be some increased longevity with iridium, with the rhodium and others, especially as connected to what you would call the natural diet and the removal and release of flushing toxins from the system. This alone will enhance your ability for increased longevity. The human body easily has the capacity within the next 15 years of beginning to lay the foundations for a lifespan of about 300 years. Another question. The rhodium and the iridium are the powder that David Hudson has been providing to people. Would it be better if the iridium and rhodium would be separate? And Bashar says, no. They know what to do when they're in your body. Sometimes they actually work better when they are in concert with monoatomic chromium. And by adding the monoatomic chromium to the iridium and rhodium, it would be even more efficacious. And I happen to find out in my own studies that the only place I know of where you can get monoatomic chromium is in green beans. Another question that was asked of Bashar, for those of us who are making the choice of taking more of the natural foods that contain rhodium and iridium, I'm just wondering what we can expect from them. I know we can expect better health and better being. And Bashar says, well, feeling lighter, more energetic, needing less sleep, so on and so forth. Better ability to heal, knit tissue, and so on and so forth in case of injury. Better enhancement of all sensory apparatus in the body, so on and so forth. More overtime, psychic sensitivity, and sensitivity to other higher frequency energies, and so forth, is what you can, as you say, expect. And I might also point out that this whole idea of a discovery made the Budwig diet back in the 50s, a cancer cure that's still used in Europe, by the way, contained flaxseed oil and cottage cheese. Interesting to know, the flaxseed oil contains rhodium and iridium, and so it's no wonder now that that was an effective cancer treatment. Here's what Bashar had to say on M-Gold. Question, I'm aware that in order to provide to us rhodium and iridium, we can go to carrots and grapes, or other plants which can provide gold, the monoatomic gold. And Bashar says, that which exhibits the highest color in your visible spectrum, violet, yes, therefore eggplant, and so on and so forth, flowering kale, etc. However, if each of you had what is called a broad-spectrum diet that was basically vegetarian in nature, you would thus encounter everything that you would need in that broad-spectrum diet, and you wouldn't necessarily have to focus on one particular. Interesting to note here that do we really have to take the gold to have longevity, and does that correct the DNA, giving us the 20-year-old body again? Bashar says it may not do that exact thing for every individual, but will have the tendency to generalize the traits of your human form so that there would be a range somewhere between your 20 and 40 year, averaging out about to your 33rd year. This is what happens generally when you become spirit, when you die. Most spirits snap back to the etheric form of about their 33rd year of life. And I should also mention that I'm not trying to promote this as the magic pill to enlightenment. I know we did give an example of that David gave in his lecture about a man who went through the 40-day fast and pretty much did the whole ascension rites, like the rite of passage of the Egyptians. And I view this material as a trigger. And as Bashar would say, a greasing of the wheels. And that's the main connection with the ascension process. And in terms of a company that I would recommend, it's called Ascension Alchemy. And I just want to read a little bit from their advertising. Ascension is a biological reality. There's an evolution of species occurring on this planet, as well as an evolution of consciousness, the birth of a new kind of being, and white powder gold can assist with this spiritual metamorphosis. Your light body is already completely awake as one of the multidimensional aspects of all that you are. Becoming that light body here involves a very real metamorphosis that enables you to hold a higher light resonance. White powder gold feeds the light body. This transformation includes specific biological and chemical changes. It's a very real process that we'll explore together to assist with the reality of your personal ascension process with white powder gold, meditations, and more. And one of the reasons that I recommend them, they've been in the business since about 1990, and unlike a lot of people that recommend like one size fits all, I mean, they actually go through the trouble to prescribe certain sequences of substances to take and that are sort of more personally prescribed for your own personal reasons for taking it and your own personal evolutionary state. So I would highly recommend the Ascension Alchemy, and personally would shy away from the products that are advertised on the net, sort of like, here's a bottle of this, take it, sort of the one-size-fits-all approach. And in addition to that, I found some very interesting information concerning, you know, some of the dangers of taking too much of this stuff, which can result in some really nasty situations. And this is information from Thoth Tahuti. And the question is, what is Prima Matra? Well, Prima Matra is an ancient alchemical term that means prime, unviolated first matter, and covers any form of matter that is resonant with the original first matter. And according to Thoth, originally this planet was entirely a spiritual creation without a matter counterpart. In other words, it was pure energy with divine patternings. As it began to slow down its vibrational frequency, matter began to coalesce from the pure energy patternings. The first matter that did coalesce was absolutely pure, as yet untainted by negative intrusions of human thought or feeling as we know it today. This first matter was called Prima Matra by the ancients. The forms of Prima Matra we have exist today are less in vibrational frequency than the original Prima Matra, but powerful nonetheless for spiritual transformation and physical healing. As an example, you could see the original Prima Matra as light just beyond the ultraviolet end of the visible spectrum of the rainbow, and the forms of Prima Matra with us today are the visible colors of the rainbow. He also says the substance is being revealed at this time to the planet to assist humanity with the transformational process. The powder, and he's referring to white powder gold, helps the cellular consciousness to assimilate and reorient to the grace factor. It is not, however, a cure-all, nor should it be treated as a normal type of supplement. And he has impressed on us that we simply cannot comprehend just how sacred the substance truly is. And on a more scientific and technical note, the natural powder relates spiritually to a grouping of substances coming forth at this time referred to as monatomics. Monatomics have been exhibiting the properties of superconductors at normal temperatures. And at this current time, there is a manufactured substance being produced by David Hudson under the name Orme that is nearly 100% rhodium, iridium, in the monatomic high-spin state, according to Hudson. And according to Thoth, this is also a viable form of prima matra, but works more on the electromagnetic level than do the natural powders. And Tahuti has cautioned that it is not to be taken lightly, however, for if it is not used properly, there is a danger of burning out the higher-level light body. The nature of this danger is such that an individual who is taking too much would perhaps not receive any warning signs. In fact, might just receive just the opposite, as feelings of euphoria could be quite prevalent. Once the physical systems have saturated with the light frequencies present in the powder, it would start to build matrices within higher levels of the auric field. If the individual consciousness was not prepared to sufficiently to support these higher level consciousness matrices, the process would rapidly reverse, causing an implosion within the higher light body. This condition, according to Thoth, is more severe than that known as death. The ramifications are that an individual's soul could actually become entrapped between incarnations, as the soul was able to experience higher levels of grace, but not able to truly assimilate those frequencies, and simultaneously would have no desire to return to its alternative karmic pathing of evolution. And so his recommended minimum dosage for a period of anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks or months is highly, highly recommended. And he says basic safe dosage guidelines were to take concentrations of 1/16 of 1/2 of 1/8 teaspoon teaspoon, and dilute this in 1 quart of pure water, then refrigerate and drink about 2 to 3 ounces of the solution once or twice a day. And the use of lithium water is even better. And he goes on to say about Orme and David Hudson, as many of the readers are already aware, David Hudson has undergone an intensive process to understand and develop Orme. Orme stands for orbitally rearranged monoatomic elements, and to date David has identified and been able to produce in a laboratory the following in reportedly monoatomic form: rhodium, iridium, ohmium, gold, palladium, osmium, and ruthenium. And basically, when they melted down the gold, all those materials came to exist. And Toss said that in ancient times, when the rites of passage such as this were performed in the temples, the initiates were prepared through a specific sequencing of consciousness evolution. And many times this was accomplished through a series of mini rites prior to undertaking any such major rite of passage. He indicated that there are some souls who are able to go through these procedures without the elaborate preparations, but even in the ancient times, they were very few, and there are even fewer today. He indicates that there was a strong component present in the consciousness of many light workers today which desired to escape this reality and ascend sooner rather than later. And the indication was that this was somewhat of an escapist perspective rather than a true pathing for the soul. In addition, he said that there were some serious psychological, physical, and spiritual ramifications for those who attempted such a sacred rite of passage with inadequate preparation. And he actually gives some outlines that he feels would be helpful in selecting and preparing souls for such a rite of passage in today's reality. And he thinks that many incarnated souls could enter the rite of passage with prima matra if the following stipulations were adhered to. One, if people were carefully selected from among those who had a natural and obvious spiritual presence and dedication, although some would simply be naturals without any previous esoteric education, many would be found as initiates in true mystery schools around the world. as well as the self-initiated. Two, all those initially selected would then be required to have a brain wave scan to find what percentage of theta rhythms they naturally produced and under what stimuli in order to be able to deduce their spirit to matter consciousness via this means. A whole science would need to be developed to accommodate such research. However, once the science was in place, each individual could not only be analyzed for selection, but certain variations in the procedures leading up to the rite of passage and the rite itself could be customized for each individual initiate. It does not need to be a tedious process to develop the science. If reliable spiritual channels or source translators were incorporated into the project rather than relying on trial and error, this is the appropriate service for this substance. And I would totally concur with that, that with respect to this whole process, I mean, this is a substance that really needs to be brought to the public attention because obviously a lot of people are suffering that could be cured from various ailments, not to mention, though, that its impact upon such things as power, self-sufficiency, it obviously has its ramifications in all kinds of, I suspect, military secret operations because it involves, you know, space travel, teleportation. I mean, there's just so many areas, and finding the right sequences of using these elements is key. And for the individual, advice we give on ET Yoga is to proceed with caution, and if you want to be super conservative, stick to that great vegetarian diet, and you're going to get lots of monoatomics naturally. In fact, aloe vera is the one that I'm most familiar with in Romania, for example. There's an ancient custom where they mix honey with aloe vera. They take the plant and squeeze the juice from the leaves, put it in the honey, and then eat it by the spoonful. And aloe vera is known to be about cures about 90% of any type of stomach issues. Aloe vera has been known for years as an external healer, but people aren't aware of its internal values. And no wonder it's an old ancient remedy, and now we know that why is it effective? Because it contains monatomic elements. And on that note, I'd just like to wish everyone my sincerest wishes for your attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. And I hope you tune in again next week. Good night.
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all.